Oh, hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Verbal Shenanigans podcast. Before we get to this episode, which is a very great episode, I think they're all great. They're all like my little children. You know, I like them, some better than others. But I want to tell you about the sponsors real quick that make the podcast possible. Now, first sponsor on this podcast is Manskirt Brewing, okay? Located in Hackettstown, New Jersey, right in the bank building. They got all sorts of new things going on. They got, new seating, new murals. They just added four more temps, all sorts of seasonally inspired ales. And it's just a really cool place to go visit. You can go there and do, like, the brewery tour. There's two other breweries right down the street. You can do the three. But they got all sorts of things going. They had the St. Patrick's Day parade recently. They did yoga there. So just give them a little follow on Instagram or Facebook, and you could be part of the Manskirt family. You know, that's better than having a man in your family that wears a skirt. But Manskirt Brewing, give them like on Instagram or Facebook. We have two breweries that sponsor this podcast. Demented Brewing is the other one. Demented Brewing is located in Middlesex, New Jersey. If you take 287, you'll get right to it. And it's one of my favorite breweries to go to. You go there, and the tap room is just so much fun. They just got a crowler station. Which means, for those of you who don't know what a crowler is, it's basically like, instead of a growler, it's a can, so you can get anything on tap, fill it up, seal the can right in front of your face. It's amazing. And they just got a really good tap room. The mural is amazing, and they do barrel programs and sour programs. And for a brewery that's only been open just about 2 years, a little under 2 years, it's just one of the best ones in New Jersey. By far. Each Sunday, they got something different. Last Sunday, they just released Cafe Negro, a black coffee IPA, which is brewed in collaboration with the New Jersey Craft Beer Society, with local cold-pressed coffee from Benfato Coffee in Hillsboro, New Jersey. That sounds awesome. And then this Sunday, coming up, they're going to be releasing a whole bunch of things. So they have the Bottles of Wrath, the Russian Imperial Stout, aged in bourbon barrels, which is awesome. I've had it before. And then Astarte, their strawberry cream ale on draft in the tasting room. And then on Tuesdays, they do things in the Firkin and run things through Randall's. And they're just a great brewery, great people. Go to Demented Brewing and tell them Verbal Shenanigans sent you. Finally, Trivia Revolution, fueled by craft beer. All over the state of New Jersey. You got different accounts. You got different bars. They're playing trivia. And Trivia Revolution is the best one to go to. One, because I work there. And two, because they are the best. They're associated with craft beer and breweries. They give prizes out to breweries. You can be in last place, still win a prize. So go on out. Go play trivia. You could be in last. Trust me, a lot of the best people are in last. I mean, Berlow came out and played, and he was in last. It's fine. Trivia Revolution, fueled by craft beer. Now, on the show today, we had a really fun show today. One, we had a guy from high school calling, messaged me to apologize about stealing my video games, basically 13 years ago, and we resolved the issue. I didn't even know it was an issue. And then we have Abigail Harrison, who is a 19-year-old girl who wants to become the first person on Mars on the show. And she's got a huge movement going and well worth the listen. Very intelligent. So with that in mind, please enjoy the podcast.
Hey there. This is Abby Harrison, also known as Astronaut Abby. And you're listening to Verbal Shenanigans.
But our shenanigans are cheeky and fun.
Yeah, I mean, his shenanigans are cruel and tragic.
Which makes them not shenanigans at all, really.
Evil shenanigans.
I swear to God, I'll pistol whip the next guy that says shenanigans.
All right, hello and welcome to episode 140 of the Verbal Shenanigans podcast. That is a lot of me. Yeah, it's a lot of episodes. We just came off a very awesome episode where we did live at Tap House 15. We interviewed the Miller brothers, Jim and Dan, which are, they both fought in the UFC. Jim still fights in the UFC. We talk everything from beer to hunting to just some of his opponents to weight cutting, all that stuff. But that was a good one. So if you did not hear that one or this is your first time listening, welcome to the show. And go listen to that episode and check out Jim and Dan on Instagram and whatnot. But welcome back to the show. And it's a snowy day. I'm looking outside my window. Okay. And there is nothing but snow. And it was very entertaining trying to watch the dog poo before. Basically, like, his hind legs were about 2 feet off the ground, and the snow was touching his butt while pooing. He was not a happy camper. But, here's Mike Berlew right now. I was just going to say, I was just introducing the show. Hello, caller.
Hi, am I on the air?
Caller?
Am I?
Yes. First time, long time?
Oh, definitely. I have a question for the co-host. Are you that amazing? Yes or no?
No. It's funny. I was just introducing the show, and I was going to call you right in, and then you rang. So I feel like we'll just pump you right in right now. But I was just about to say, Berlew is not here. He's somewhere. Where the hell are you again?
I am in Kings Mountain, North Carolina.
Kings Mountain, home of they invented the peach there. That's where they first grew the peach. Proven fact.
He invented it. They declared him the king. There's a huge mountain over here. I'm surprised that they didn't call it Peach Mountain, but they went with King Mountain. So, and their years are North Carolina history.
Yeah. So what the hell are you doing in North Carolina? Obviously, you're there for work, but...
Yeah, it's working on some phone system, trying to get it up. It was going to be a two-day event, and then God dropped about a foot of snow in Jersey, so yeah. I'm here till Thursday.
Yeah, it's a bad storm, you know. There's a lot of snow. It's still kind of just, like, very windy, and it's cold. But, you know, it's in the end, it's snow. Like, people will survive.
It's a storm.
Yeah. No real reason to freak out here, but
I was freaking out. It was overcast here today. It was 50, and it was quite overcast. I saw clouds. I started going on Facebook with updates every 20 minutes, so I'll keep you all posted on that.
Start saying bye to your family members. You know, writing
got
notes.
A bottle of wine.
But it was pretty bad. I went to shovel the driveway, and some good Samaritan was just walking down the street with a snowblower and really blew out most of my driveway, which was pretty fantastic. He probably saved me 2.5 hours of shoveling. So, God bless that guy.
It would have been great if you had a snowblower to work. Hey, Doug Max.
Yeah. Doug, who is a fellow comedian, if you say, he let me borrow a snowblower about 2 years ago. The thing didn't work. The first time I go to get it started, I go to pull the string, and the string snaps, and I fly backwards. And then it would work for about 10 minutes, stop working. It was like more hassle to get it started than just to get out there and shovel. And then, he asked for the broken snowblower back as I was moving out because I no longer really needed it. And I gave it to, Bill Aronson, who is a man who plays with puppets. And he said that, the snowblower barely worked. So Doug, I appreciate the thought, but, maybe it's time to retire that snowblower or keep it for yourself. Stop trying to push your broken snowblower on everybody. but snowblowing itself is fun. Like when it's not like that cold out, I could go out there and snowblow all day. It's especially like not my old drive. My old driveway was insane, but like a flat ground, you got headphones on. It's nice.
Yeah, it's kind of fun. It's kind of relaxing. The only other caveat is the wind factor, because sometimes there's nothing worse than blowing snow and then it just smacking you right back in the face.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's better than the shovel. And we have one cheap plastic shovel that's cracked, so I was like, this is going to be a long day. But thank you to the good Samaritan here. I wanted to get into something real quick, so before we get into some other stuff. But I... the other day I'm on Facebook and I get a message, and it's from a guy I went to high school with. He was a year older than me. He played soccer with me. And I'm going to read you the message. Okay. It said, I never returned your Nintendo games. My mom threw them away thinking they were ours. I've been very ashamed for a very, very long time. Long overdue. I'm really, really am sorry, and I apologize for being an asshole. Now, I have no recollection of said video games. And I asked him, like, what are you talking about? And he's like, are you kidding me? Like, I've been carrying around this burden for 10 years.
Sounds like this guy is going through, like, was it the 10-step program?
That's what I was thinking.
For everything you did.
Yeah, exactly. Whatever it is.
I got plastered one night. I had your video games. We went out partying. I lost Duck Hunt. I am so damn sorry. I have no idea what happened to Kirby. This is one of the worst things. And I tear up every night thinking about Excite Bike.
Yeah. I just started laughing. I'm like, dude, we got to, instead of like me trying to ask you all these questions now, I'm like, can we talk to you on the podcast and kind of figure out this whole what happened? what video games they were, what kind of guilt he's been carrying around. So we're gonna call him in a few minutes here, but
all right,
4 minutes. But so yeah, that saga hopefully will be solved, and I hope I could bring him a little levity to his life, you know, a little balance, he's got that off his chest. But
it's kind of weird. I kind of had a somewhat similar experience. Not in that exact home with Nintendo games, but a girl I went to high school with that were like Facebook friends. She just like randomly Facebook guy and me, and it's like, oh, hey, how's it going? I'm thinking about changing careers. And it was just one of those weird progresses where it's like we had like a 5-sentence back and forth with each other. And it was still kind of like, what possess you to pick me of all people to contact?
She was like, comedy and IT was what I was thinking about getting into. What do you think?
Well, I'm not good in either, so good luck with that.
It looks like a very booming career.
Yeah. I've been hearing about this Tyrannies where I figure big bucks occur when you perform there.
Yes.
Any thoughts?
Yes, I also seen you've been at Scotty's Comedy Club once before. That's got to be big stuff. Big stuff.
Yeah, if you made it there, you made it nowhere.
And what is this, Rocking Joe's? That sounds like a very fancy club. But
that's right up there with Stand Up New York, right in between. And no, I mean, when
I thought it was like the comedy
when Chappelle cellar. Goes out, yeah, when Chappelle goes out. You know, he basically flips a quarter to decide which one he goes to.
Speaking of comedy, I watched two things. I watched a couple comedy specials. Yeah, Amy Schumer's. God, it was terrible. And I'm not, you know, like, she's easy to, like, you know, hate on, blah, blah, blah. But it was just so, the jokes seemed like they were written by someone who just started comedy. Like, they're just all gross-out jokes, you know, like, I'm fat, my vagina smells like that. Like, it was just, like, bad. And it was, like, really, like, hacky. It was kind of weird because I think her, like, some of her comedy has been very good. And, like, her sketches are good. And I think she's a good actress. But, oof, bad. But on the other hand, I watched Jim Norton's this morning. Fantastic. I mean, he just brings that dirty uncomfortableness and just makes it so funny, man. Oh, so, yeah, night and day on those two.
It's kind of weird how I always notice if a comedian is killing it on stage, their movies suck.
Mm-hmm.
And if they're killing it in the movies, their stand-up sucks. It's just, I can't remember somebody who connected again. I might have to think to go back to Eddie Murphy when he was killing it and then Beverly Hills Cop and stuff like that. I can't think of a recent example where somebody was just destroying on stage and you're like craving the next special, and they came out with a movie and it's like, oh my God, that
You know what it is, too?
That's what I love about him.
You know what it is? Me and Joe were talking about this while walking the dog. You're someone like Amy Schumer or any comic at that point. You're doing what you got to there. You got to strike while the iron's hot, you know, and like you got to think like some of your early comedy specials. You might have worked 10 years on that material, you know, to get it to a point where it's perfect and crafted and amazing, you know. And whereas then that you release that special, you do that movie, you're not out in the clubs every night. And then maybe you're trying to turn around an hour, a new hour in a year or something like that. Whereas the first one, you know, you had 10 years, you're working on it. Like some of those jokes we would never know. Like, and I think comedians are changing a little bit. Like only Louis C.K. is really, even he's trying to slow down a little bit. He was putting out almost 2 a year, you know, hours. Impossible. It's impossible to turn out that much material. For it to be perfect. Mm-hmm. You hear all these interviews with these guys, like they release their specials too early where they find all this other stuff in it, you know, like well afterwards. And they're like, oh, shit, you know, like the bit wasn't done yet. And I definitely like the Amy Schumer one was rough for me. I couldn't even get through it.
Yeah, even her Old Navy commercials are freaking stupid. So,
yeah. But
I mean, Julia Louis-Dreyfus, she worked on her Old Navy commercials. She crafted that stuff. When she went out there, I'm like, oh, my God, I didn't think about the, you know, the tees for $14.99. But Schumer, she's just hacking it.
Yeah, I mean, and I don't hate her at all. Like, I thought her show was entertaining. The train wreck was entertaining. I thought some of her old stand-ups entertaining. Yeah. I've heard her in interviews. She comes off likable. I just think she gets hated on because she's like the biggest thing. But no, man, this special is rough. But it's a good time.
She also goes. She also kind of goes a little. I don't know if you call it bipolar or she just changes her tone. Where it's like, and like you'll listen to her specials and she'll say she's fat or whatever, and then like somebody will bring up, oh, what's it like to be a plus size? What do you mean by plus size? Blah blah blah.
And it was funny because, like, everything seemed off to me. Like she's, like, wearing a leather outfit, and she's, like commenting on the leather. It's like she almost wore the outfit just to put, like, 5 jokes in there, you know? Hard to get out. Ooh, I'm sweating in it. Like, it was almost, like, planted. And then she comes out with a bottle of wine, and she's drinking the bottle of wine, like, on stage. Like, it just seemed like she was playing the train wreck character. Like, it was very forced to me. Like, and she would make all these comments, like, drink right out of the bottle one, like, you and me later. Like, it just seemed really, like, poorly done. Like, I don't know. Like, she was playing a character, and she wasn't playing herself, you know. Like, she was playing a character from train wreck.
Yeah, they almost sounds like some network exec was like, you know, we're going to sign you to this. You know, it would be great.
Yeah.
You know, but something like that.
Jimmy Norton's special, on the other hand, wow. I mean, I was howling. Like, Alex was listening to it while she was like, can you turn it off? It's gross. But it was so funny. He definitely just takes dirty to it. He's like, this one reminded me of, like, old Jimmy Norton. Just, like, insanely.
O&A, Jimmy
Norton. Yeah, insanely honest. And, like, he just touches on a lot of different things. And he way less political than the last two. So I really enjoyed
it.
Anyway, he made a lot of good points, political ones, but I wasn't enjoying them as much as this one.
Yeah. I mean, he's one, I'll always give him credit when, like, he'll do interviews with other, like, radio stations. He can still be damn hilarious without having to go that route. He has his O&A side, but he has capabilities to go to the other side if need be.
Yeah, he's a smart dude, and, like, the thing with him is, like, you're like, he used to get a little bit one note in his, like, comedy specials or his book, like, all right, I get the tranny thing. But he seems to, like, this time he found even, like, another angle on it. It was pretty interesting, but I would recommend that. That and the, I thought Bill Burr's wasn't as good as normal, still, like, pretty amazing. But Neil Brennan's special was fantastic. He wrote for the Chappelle Show. It was called Three Mics or something like that. He did a storytelling comedy and then, like, one-liners, and he would switch between them during the show, which sounds kind of like it wouldn't be good, but it was actually, I thought it was really well done. But it's a good time for comedy, man. I mean, Chappelle comes out next week with two. Seinfeld's doing two. Mm-hmm. Chris Rock's doing them. You know, like Netflix is just like, okay, these things don't cost a ton to produce, and we're going to put the money into them, and it's just going to be there. I read an article. They're going to do a Netflix. There's comedy. There's a special once a week next year, at least. So. Which is
pretty, wow.
Yeah, that's a lot of comedy.
Yeah, it's like the old days. I mean, I remember the old days of HBO. It used to be like started with Rodney Dangerfield, and like monthly, it was like a big headliner after big headliner every month, and all. It was a good time. So I mean, it's coming back, and
it's definitely kind of like comedy is booming
to produce. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it is. Think about it. Like, you're not, like, writing. The writing's done for you, so you're not paying writers. The comic is the writer. You're not. It's a minimal production, usually. Five cameras, something like that, you know? And it's stage, you know, stage and audience. There's not, like, a ton of planning that has to go into it. But Jim Norton special, that's the best, one of the best openings, man. It has Ricky Gervais and Louis and Robert De Niro in it. And it's so funny. But it's pretty. Speaking of comedy, I did a show this weekend at a firehouse down in New Egypt, down in your
my old school area. Yep.
Yes. And it was in the middle of nowhere.
Did everybody come up to you asking me how I'm doing and when I'm coming back? And
they're like, this town's been craving the Burl since 1998.
Yeah. Did you go down the street named after me? The one they dedicated to me. A lot of crackheads there, but still, it's the thought that counts.
Yeah. It's like Burloo Lane. It's where all the homeless hang out. And do it. But I did this. It was a fireman's show, and I'm hosting, and I'm doing a bit on the fart bit where I'm talking about my buddy with the solo cup, and so I'm doing the bit, and all of a sudden I'm finishing, and then a guy throws a solo cup on stage right in the middle of my set. I was like, well, that's a first. I guess
comedy.
Yeah, I guess he thought he was being funny, which no one's ever funny when they're trying to be part of the show.
Every great comedy bit involves somebody who wasn't planned in it.
Yes.
Every single one.
But this guy was like,
7 dirty words, some guy jumped up on stage with Carlin and started cursing at him.
Yeah.
Amazing.
But it was a little interesting. I got a little angry, actually. I was like, oh, thanks for the solo cut. Like, don't throw shit on stage. Like, don't be that guy. And then I also, there was no stool, and I had a Yingling in my hand, and I put it down, and I knocked it over during my set. But it was all right, though. Old nervous Scott would have been like, and try to like ignore it. I just acknowledge it, and I'm like, oh, Jesus. You know, like, and the audience laughed at me, so it wasn't too bad. But
it'd be great if you had like 8 minutes and you use 2 minutes looking around for paper towels to clean it up and just start yelling, I'm sorry.
Yeah. But, bro, you believe in, are you interested in space at all?
Oh, yeah. I mean, just before I came down here, me and the girl went to the planetarium at the Morris County College and all the showing off stars. I'm always interested in, space travel and where we're going to go from here.
Yeah. Are you, would you think we're going to be on Mars soon or what?
I think it's an eventual goal. I mean, now that it's now pretty much a task of an independent company with SpaceX versus NASA, which is solely based on, you know, government funding, I think we got a better shot of getting there sometime in my lifetime, but I'm not going to say beyond a shadow of a doubt. I mean, I'm sure when we were all in high school, we were saying, yeah, in 20 years, man, we're going to have flying cars and stuff. But we always think it's going to come a lot sooner than actuality.
Yeah. Yeah. I like the stars and stuff like that, but I never really got deep into like astronomy or anything like that. I love science, but like Joe Rogan had Neil deGrasse Tyson on the other day, and that guy is so smart, but is so entertaining at the same Neil deGrasse Tyson, that is Rogan too, but Neil deGrasse Tyson on space. He just like he makes your brain hurt listening. He was talking about how like it's a possibility that one infinity could be bigger than another, and I'm like, how is that? And he like literally goes into explanation of it, and like your brain just can't even wrap around the idea of what he's saying. But you know, to know that people can do. What amazes me, they do all this studying, like, without ever going there. You know, they're able to just figure things out, like, mathematically, and it just, my brain is just so not that, and I, like, admire those kind of people, you know?
You're basically like Revenge of the Nerds 2, where you have all the brilliant nerds, and you're ogre. Join them.
Yes, yes, that's exactly it, Barlow. That's exactly it.
I never thought I would have a Revenge of the Nerds 2 reference, but there you go.
See, I did. It goes right next to your 17 Dukes of Hazzard references. Your
yeah. Well, I have them all in separate piles, and I'm like, I'm never going to get to that. And then you just brought them, like, oh. You know, I bring the piles with me when I go to North Carolina.
Yeah, I feel like a big pile of, like, index cards laid out. Like, okay, Dukes of Hazzard jokes are the green ones.
You know, I have to check in an extra bag just for that. It's weird.
Yeah, but the idea of space is mind-blowing to me. It's like, I don't think I'd ever want to go. Like, if they ever did get it to, like, you know, where it is, like, a commuter. Like, you can go for a trip. I don't know if I could.
Yeah.
I don't know if I could suck it up enough.
Like, it's a hard thing to say. I mean, I love roller coasters and stuff like that, but I'm also not a hype guy, and obviously, I can just. I gotta imagine it's not the most, you know, pleasant ride when you're coming back from the atmosphere back onto the Earth. So.
Yeah. Plus, I mean, if you went with like your girlfriend. It would be impossible because you wouldn't be able to take enough. You wouldn't be taking selfies in space has to be difficult.
Hey, my iPhone's floating away. You know? No, no, no.
I bought the $10,000 space package. You got like a satellite floating camera that
got a picture in front of the stars. No, 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 not this star. That was a little dipper. This is a big dipper.
Yeah, like it's like a satellite that literally follows you around and like takes pictures of you just as you're in space. But I don't think I could do it. I as much as I would say to myself that I'm like manly enough to do it and would be adventurous. I don't think I would risk it all to go see Mars or the moon or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, I guess if it got presented to me, God knows how, I would definitely think about it. But in the end, like, attempting to go that route, I don't think I would make the journey.
What are you talking about? By the time the way your job's going, they'll be like, hey, we're going to need to send you to the moon for a weekend. You got to set up some servers up there. You okay with that? Yes, yes, yes. Thank you.
Yeah. Can you come check my phone? I'm on the moon. Yeah, but when you get back.
I was segueing into our guest, which is just about time. I wanted to get a astronaut on the show, which we still will. I guarantee that. But and when I came across...
John Glenn still dead?
You know, we can get him back. Not a big deal. Not a big deal. I've been watching a lot of Game of Thrones. Those guys come back left and right. But
yeah, exactly.
You watch Game of Thrones?
No, I keep on hearing how great it is, should. I'll eventually catch up to it.
Mm-hmm. It was as good as advertised. I put it off all the way until just recently because I was kind of like, oh man, like that's a lot of seasons to watch, and it was like very cumbersome. But
yeah.
Watched it with the girl, and we loved it, and we blew through it like pathetically in like 3 weeks. but yeah, I don't know how I just got on Game of Thrones, but I was looking up astronauts, and I came across a 19-year-old girl named Abby. Okay, Abby, let me just make sure. Astronaut Abby. Abigail Harrison is her name. And what makes her – she's actually done, like, TED Talks, and what makes her very interesting is she has this goal of being being on Mars, being the first person on Mars. And she's raised this money to become an astronaut and things like that. It sounds pretty interesting. So she's not going to be the – she'll be the second youngest person on the podcast, I believe. Right? Yeah, Kira.
Oh yeah, that is true by a long shot.
But yeah, I think she's
here with the guest though, so I guess by rule she's an actual guest, so she'll be the youngest.
Yeah, so very interesting. I listened to her TED talk before this episode, and you know, for a 19-year-old kid, it's pretty amazing some of the stuff she wants to accomplish. So let's give her a call, and then hopefully this 3-way calling works, and we'll do our best to not interrupt each other.
I don't know. I kind of like doing that.
So if I just press add call, can I just do that way too? Yeah.
What's that?
I could just press add call, right?
Yeah, that's the general route. Yep.
Okay. Well, I don't have my Verbal Shenanigans IT department with me today, so I'm calling her now. Dun, 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 dun,
dun. Your call has been forwarded to an.
Well, I just called her and I got no answer, so we'll wait a few minutes here. But
yeah, all right.
Yeah, but I guess when I call. Until she answers, you can't hear the dial.
No.
But
it's just kind of quiet on my side, so.
Yeah, well.
I know that's what you strive for on your side with me, but still.
That's correct. That is 100% correct. I was saying, when we started the podcast, I was saying a very interesting, like last week we're talking to guys who get their heads beaten in for a living. Now we're talking to a girl who wants to go to outer space, so. Well, hopefully we'll be talking to you. but it should be.
We couldn't get the girl who's going to outer space, but we got on the phone Doug Max.
Yay. But, let me try one more time here. And then I'm sure she'll call back. Oh, shit. I did that wrong. I'm just gonna keep this rolling while we're doing it. Do, 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 do. What the hell? Okay, let's see. Let's try this one more. Oh, here she comes. All right, be right over in a minute. Hello, is this Abby?
It is. I think I may have just missed your call.
You did. How dare you?
I know. Well, you called a minute early, so
that's true. I tried to be on time, you know. Like, but Abby, welcome to Verbal Shenanigans. This is Scott Brennan, and this is the first interview we're doing with a 3-way call because my co-host is stuck in North Carolina. So on the other line is Mike. Mike, you hear us? Maybe not. Hello. Mike is missing. Let me see if I can get him on the line real quick.
Alrighty.
He was on. He was there seconds ago. Let's see.
Got you on two lines now, apparently.
Yeah, hey, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Abby, can you hear me?
I can hear you loud and clear.
Perfect. All right. So yeah. Welcome to the show. Thanks for giving us a few minutes here. We've had a scheduling nightmare, but the snow helped us out here.
I'm sorry to hear it's been tough, but yeah, the snow has been a blessing to us all, I think. I got the day off from classes, so I'm also very pleased with it.
So where are you calling from right now?
I'm calling from Wellesley College in Massachusetts.
Oh, okay. So I was just saying, wait, what are you on a cell phone right now?
I am.
All right, yeah, I'm just going to, every time you talk, I'm getting this weird clicking sound.
Oh,
I'm not sure what that
is. I don't know what to.
I don't hear about that. From my
end. Yeah, well, all right, well, doesn't matter. It's fine. But actually, know what you do? Can you hang up and I'll call you and see if we get a better connection?
Sure, no problem.
All right, cool.
All right.
Yeah, I was getting like a, wow, I have a call that says Michael and Michael.
I think that's what it is, because it was weird. You called me back, so.
No. Here, then.
I think I'll add one.
Here, let me hang up on both of you, Michaels. I'll hang up on both of you. I'll call you, and then I'll call her.
Sounds good.
Bye. So, yeah. Little tech problems. Gonna sort things out here. Caller?
All right. I'm,
okay, you're there.
I'm here.
All right. And now let's get Abby on here. Okay. Yeah, maybe that was some kind of weird mix up with the two Michaels on there. As if one burla wasn't enough.
Hello?
Hello?
All right. Do I sound better now?
Way better. Way better. Mike, can you hear?
Yeah, I can hear.
Oh, perfect. But yeah. Yeah, so thanks for giving us the snow. Like I said, that's why Mike's in North Carolina. He can't get home. But I guess it worked out because you're able to do the interview. So that's...
Yeah. Sorry to hear that you're stranded, Mike.
Well, I mean... If we eventually get to Mars, I guess eventually I'll get back to New Jersey, so.
Now, see, I'm not upset that he's stranded at all. In fact, if we can keep it this way, if we can keep it this way, the show would probably be much, much better.
Scott's actually trying to send me more south to get away from him.
I do all sorts of things. I call in bomb threats on his plane's home and, you know, to whatever keeps him in another area. But
yeah, anything.
Got it. Yeah, it's weird. My plane landed in Cuba. I don't know what's going on here.
And I'm like, oh, sorry, the connection doesn't work. Guess you can't be on this week. But Abby, thanks for coming on. You're calling from Con. So you are, you're what, 19 years old right now?
Yes.
I was just saying you are the second youngest person to be on the podcast. The other one was my six-year-old niece.
Oh, yeah, so cute.
It was pretty good. She has some wild theories on life, that's for sure. But I was watching your I looked you up. We were looking to get an astronaut on the show, and I came across your name and found your story very interesting. I actually just watched your TED Talk this morning. First off, are you currently right now, like, studying to be an astronaut? Are you in a program that is... like preparing you for it? Where are you currently now? And then we'll kind of get into your backstory a little bit.
So no, the short answer to that would be no. And that's something that I try to be very clear about, that there is no pre-selection program for NASA astronauts or anything like that. I have to go through the same process of applying and whatnot as every other person in the United States who wants to be an astronaut with NASA. And I will probably start doing that in about 8 years. Oh. So right now I'm studying astrobiology and Russian for my undergrad. And then after completing that, I'll hopefully go into a doctorate program, a PhD program in astrobiology or a related field.
Wow.
So I can be qualified to apply to be an astronaut. But what I'm doing right now is I'm doing things on my own to try and... really, I guess you could say, beef up my resume so that I really am a more qualified fit when I get around to applying. So things like scuba diving, getting my pilot's license, learning different languages, those types of things to give myself the best chance at becoming an astronaut.
That's awesome. Now, what, for people who don't know, like, you know, all the other people besides you and me, but people don't know what is the process that someone would apply to become an astronaut? Like, And why do you have to wait 8 years? What do you need in order for that to happen?
Yeah, so the process to become an astronaut is actually pretty straightforward. Just like any other government job at NASA that you would want to apply for, you go to the NASA website, and if they are in a selection year, so they don't hire astronauts every year, but every couple years. If they're in a selection year, you just fill out a digital application and send it in. It's all online these days. And then if you make it into the pool of applicants that they're more interested in, they will arrange for things like a health screening or an in-person interview and those types of things. And it gets more and more intense at every, I guess you could say, stage of the process that you go through. But the initial application is actually very easy. It's very open. And the base requirements to apply are a lot less than most people think. So in order to apply to be an astronaut with NASA, you have to have a four-year degree in a related program. You have to have 3 years of experience in your degree field. And there's some, you know, basic medical requirements and fitness requirements and things like that, but nothing too extensive.
Really?
And so the reason that most people think it's so much more difficult to become an astronaut and why I'm waiting a couple of years, 8 years to apply, is because it is a lot more difficult to become an astronaut.
Right.
So that's what the base for applying is. But when you look at who's actually being selected, the real criteria are much higher than that. So my honest opinion is that to be seriously considered, you have to be a PhD and you have to be in the top of your field. And you have to be very physically fit and very mentally sound and things like that. And have a lot of other experience in your repertoire in order to really stand out among the thousands and thousands of other people who are also applying.
So really, like, me, if I stay in the gym and my communications degree, I have a chance.
In theory, yes.
I could be in the pool.
I know a couple sentences in Spanish. That will help me.
Yeah, right. Hopefully. Yeah, but the problem is you don't know English.
Yeah, that's, I'm working on it.
Yeah, so what it comes down to is that I believe in the last selection that they ran, there were 10,000 people who applied, and they only chose 8 astronauts.
Wow.
And so when you look at the odds from that perspective, it starts to get more and more difficult to apply.
Right.
Not to discourage you, because I think that, you know, if that's your dream, you should definitely go for it.
Don't worry, it's not. It's now talking to astronauts. That's cool with me. Interviewing people, I guess we'll get to what you're working towards in a little bit, but. Let's go back in time. Where did the fascination with space and space travel and things like that, when did this start for you?
From the very beginning. Honestly, as long as I can remember, I've been fascinated with space and have wanted to explore it. Probably my earliest memories of that are when I was about 5 years old. And I remember standing outside in Minnesota and looking up at the night sky and seeing the stars and just asking myself, you know, every question that I could imagine. What are those? What's out there? What will we discover? Is there life? Those kinds of things. And as I got older, I the more I learned about space exploration, the more excited I became about the concept that my generation has this capacity to go out there and really explore it. It was right from the beginning. This was something I wanted to do.
Go ahead, Berlo.
I'm just kind of wondering, I mean, since you're so young, are you almost a little disappointed? We haven't, until recently, really done a lot of programs, like sending up people. We don't go to the moon anymore. Is there any kind of disappointment and kind of a little bit of a lackluster space program in your time frame of life?
So we still are definitely sending humans into space, and we've had a continual presence on the International Space Station for 15 years now, which is a almost my entire life. That's as long as I can remember there have been humans right. in space, which is it's an incredible thing to have never lived on the same planet as every other human who's alive.
Right.
But in terms of going out and exploring farther, I would say that it's a little bit disappointing what we've done in the past couple decades, because it's not very much. But I wouldn't say that I'm disappointed in the space program, because I think that we have a lot of capacity and potential, and we're planning a lot for the near future. And I think that the work that we've done in the past couple decades of exploring low Earth orbit and learning how space works is vitally important to being able to do this deeper space exploration or reach that I hope to see in the next couple years.
Now, I wanted to ask you without getting real deep into it, but, you know, this is, you just turned 19, so this was your the first election you could really participate in. Now, I'm a guy who loves science and whatnot, and really, this election, we didn't see almost no mention of practically no science, no space, no, but hardly any environmental issues. Nothing was really debated on TV. Does that disappoint you?
Yeah, I was actually very disappointed with that in this election. I mean, I understand why, because there were a lot of other things that were holding the, you know, the public interest in this election. Well, there was a lot going on.
That's all of them, basically.
Yeah, really. But like you mentioned, I'm young, but I've been around for a couple elections so far, and right. I have to say that I've never seen this lack of coverage for space or science in an election before. I remember in the 2008 election, seen all kinds of talk about what the future of the space program would be, and really there wasn't much in this election. And so, you know, it leaves people in my position and other space enthusiasts out there really wondering what can we expect in the future.
Yeah, that's what I was wondering. Does it make you nervous?
A little bit. I think any time that there is a shift in administration, that makes people nervous, because we, NASA as a government company basically is, you know, prone to also shift then. And with space travel, that's not the kind of thing that you can afford to do, because you can't be basing things off of an 8-year plan. You need to be looking at a 20-year plan or a 30-year plan. And so it's always difficult when there's a shift in who's controlling the goals of NASA. But I'm very confident in the ability of the current system being designed by NASA, which is the Space Launch System, to be able to shift with any
change
in structure. The Space Launch System, so the SLS for short, to shift with any change in the future goals or planning of NASA's outlook, because this is a launch system that really it'll be able to reach the moon or it'll be able to go to Mars. So no matter what the new goal or destination for NASA, if it were to change, would be, I think that this system would be able to manage it, which is a difference from how things have been in the past, and right. hopefully will help to smooth out changes in the future.
Now you in your TED talk you were talking about when like this actually became a realistic idea, whereas you maybe had the idea but people around you didn't, like your mom or whatever wasn't really like, everyone's like yeah you want to go to space, you know, like it's just like someone me saying I'm gonna be a baseball player, you know, stuff like that. When did this become a real possibility or real like a real moment when you were going to commit your life to it at this point?
Yeah, so I'd always been committed to it.
Right.
But like you mentioned, not a lot of people really believed in that commitment, because it's really common for kids to say that they want to be astronauts and then change their minds pretty quickly after that. But for me, it changed when I was 11 years old. And my mom realized that it had been somewhere around 6 years now where I'd been saying, you know, I want to be an astronaut consistently. And so she sat me down and she had a really hard talk with me, where she told me about all the odds and, you know, basically very sternly told me that if this was something that I wanted to do, then I needed to start working on it now, and that I would have to commit myself every day for my foreseeable future, for a good portion of the rest of my life, to making this a reality. And she thought, you know, okay, that's it. Like, I've, you know, now that she understands the realities of this dream, like, it's not just something you say, like, she'll stop talking about it, like, it's over. But no, I came back the next day, and I had gone and done some research and printed out two different write-ups of plans that I had written on how I could go about making this a reality. So things like talking about potentially going into the military or getting a pilot's license or which colleges I wanted to go to, you know, stuff that was crazy far out there for an 11-year-old to be thinking about. And when I showed that to my mom and showed her that now that I knew the realities and whatnot, I was still committed to making this dream into a reality, that's when she became my biggest supporter. And from then on out, it just, you know, people around me started to take more and more notice of the fact that I was still committed to this.
Go ahead, Mike.
With all the training that you're doing right now, and as you've been kind of playing things out, obviously there's different positions when going up to space. Do you prefer, like, the pilot side? Do you prefer being any kind of scientific discovery? If your dream came true, what would be your preference in going to space, what to do?
Yeah, so, of course, when I'm assigned to a mission, you don't necessarily get to choose what position you want to be in. And so that will be up to NASA and the people who are designing the mission and the team for the mission at NASA. But if I were able to choose, I would choose to either be the commander or a scientist on the mission, because I, you know, that's really where my talents lie are and where my education lies as well, is in science and exploration. And that's a big part of the reason of why I want to be an astronaut and why I'm doing this, is to go out there and to explore and discover things that we've never seen before. And so I think the best way to do that would be with boots on the ground, taking samples and whatnot.
Now, you in your talk that I watched earlier, and also article I read, you a big influence on you was an actual astronaut, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Which is, who is what?
Yeah. So wow, I love that you watched that TED talk, because I gave that when I was 15. So every time you talk about it, I'm a little like, oh yeah, I forgot about
you
that.
Were only 15. You were only 15 at that? Wow.
Yeah.
Jeez.
It was forever ago. When I was 13 years old, I met an astronaut in the airport of all places, just randomly. And it was Luca Parmitano from the European Space Agency. He's an Italian astronaut. He had been very newly commissioned when I'd met him. And I asked him if I could interview him for my website, my blog. And he said yes. And so we ended up sitting down. And even after the interview, he talked with me for over an hour and just gave me all kinds of advice and told me stories about his job and whatnot. And at the end, he gave me his email address and said, I will be your astronaut. If you have any more questions, please email me.
Hmm.
And there were two things that I thought were really important about that. One was that it felt like somebody else believed, someone who had already made it, who'd done what I was trying to do, believed in the reality of what I was doing. And that was really affirming to me of this goal that I had. And the other one was that that he was offering to mentor me in that way was really helpful. And so we stayed in touch for the next couple of years, and eventually Luca invited me to his launch in Baikonur, Kazakhstan. And then after that, I worked as his Earth liaison for 6 months while he was on board the International Space Station. Yeah, which was really exciting, because Luca recognized the fact that being an astronaut isn't just about what you can do in space. It's about the effect that you can have on people on Earth. And he realized that as a 40-something-year-old white man, he couldn't reach as large of a demographic of people personally as he wanted to. And so he decided that one of the demographics that he wanted to reach with this experience was young people. And by having me be his outlet for sharing his experiences living and working in space, he could reach a lot more young people than he would have been able to do on his own. So it was really exciting to get to be involved in that and to get to help share that experience, I guess.
Absolutely. Now, what's with the Mars? Like, why Mars? Is that the ultimate goal for you? I mean, you Google your name, the first thing that comes up is, you know, Abigail wants to be the, you know, the first astronaut on Mars. When did that become either a goal or an idea? And when is that a possibility?
Wow. So the question, why Mars, I could talk about for much longer than I'm sure we have time for on this podcast, but I'll try and keep it short.
Yeah. Give us the basic, the cheat notes.
All right. Sounds good. The cliff notes on this? Okay.
Yes, exactly.
On the personal level, Mars has always been a goal and a dream of mine for almost as long as I can remember wanting to be an astronaut. As a kid who became really interested in space from astronomy and from looking at the sky, Mars is one of those objects, those cosmic objects that are very easy to find with the bare eye. And it's very prominent in the night sky, I would say. And so it was something that I had focused on as a kid and really grew to think about more. And then once I got older and learned more about what we'd done in the past and whatnot, I realized that the next big goal that we could take would be towards Mars. So that's when and why my sights became set on Mars personally. However, as a society, the reasons that we should go to Mars they're much greater than that. There's things like Mars has a lot of important information about the past of our solar system and the potential future of Earth, the possibility of finding extraterrestrial life forms on Mars, all of those types of things. You know, there's a lot of science and discovery that we can do there. But another really important reason that often gets overlooked is that Mars is a perfect goal for us to have to take our next steps in space travel because it is extremely difficult. It is difficult enough to be a challenge and to really push our boundaries, to make us think outside of the box and to develop new ways of doing things. But it's not difficult enough to be impossible. It's in that sweet spot where it's something that we can do, but we're going to have to work really hard to get there. And so that's the kind of thing that's a great stepping stone to improving our technology and improving our abilities to do other things in space travel, to go farther, to travel, you know, farther out into our solar system and someday beyond. So those are the two main reasons that I would give right now of why Mars is that scientific exploration and as a stepping stone for future exploration.
Wow. It sounds like you've answered that question before.
I'd like to go to Mars just because it would be cool. That's fine, if you're wondering.
Go ahead,
for some reason, people don't respond well when I say that.
So let me ask you, as we've gone along, as they put landers on Mars, I'm sure you're keeping up with all the information. Well, what's basically coming out of it? Is the information more exciting? Have we been hearing more things where it's more we didn't see that coming versus what we expected on the planet?
Yeah, there's new stuff coming out every time that we have a probe or a lander going to Mars, and some of it's expected and some of it's unexpected. One of the big things that was unexpected a couple years ago was that NASA had found imagery showing that there was changes in the positioning of some types of visible minerals on Mars's surface, which are commonly associated with movement by water. And so that's not in any way definitive proof of water on Mars, but it was a nudge in the direction of saying, you know, we need to be looking at this possibility again. And so that was exciting to see. I really think that we've got a lot in the next couple of years also that will be happening. 2020 is a big year for Mars. There are things like the United Arab Emirates are sending a probe to Mars in 2020. And there's a couple other ones that either will be launching or reaching Mars around that time. So, you know, these next couple of years, we really should start to be seeing a lot more exciting information come out about what's going on with Mars.
Now, you want to be the first person on Mars. Like, there in your head, there's no fear. There's no, you know, that, God forbid, the last trip you ever take. How do you, like, combat that with, obviously, the want to do it, the excitement of discovering it and being the first person? Do you balance that all, or do you not even think about that?
Oh, absolutely. It's a balance. And absolutely, it's something where, you know, there's fear and there's anxiety and there's concern and those types of things. But it's just like anything else that we do in life. We have to weigh the pros and cons, and we have to ask ourselves, you know, is it worth it to drive to work today? Is it worth it to do X, Y, Z? Is it worth it? And I have had a lot of experience with that in my life because I am an adrenaline junkie. And so I have always been involved in sports that, you know, kind of extreme sports type situations, right. Things like bungee jumping, and even on a lesser level, things like gymnastics or springboard diving, or those types of sports that involve a lot of choosing to put yourself in situations where you have to be brave. And brave doesn't mean not being afraid of something. It means choosing to do it even though you are afraid to it, committing wholly to something that you're afraid of. And so I look at going to Mars in much the same way that I would look at doing a backflip. Yes, there's a lot of potential that you're going to get hurt, but you have to trust in your abilities to do it correctly, or you might as well not even try if you don't commit to it 100%. And so, yeah, it ends up being that kind of a thing where you just have to recognize, yes, this is scary, but I'm going to do it anyways. Another thing that helps is that going to Mars is probably about 15 years out at the least. And so,
right in your,
you know, I can think about it objectively
wheelhouse.
Right now. Yeah. You can think about it objectively right now, knowing that it's not in my near future. So there's no point in really being afraid at this point.
Solid answer, Abby.
Thank you. People, I'm a big fan of sports analogies. It's
Go ahead, Mike.
I keep hearing with these, if we eventually go to Mars, when we send out the first group of people, when we have this mission, when they get out there, it's basically they would have to stay out to Mars. Is that information correct, and what's generally the reason for that, if so?
I would say that that's inaccurate. The most difficult parts about getting to Mars are getting there. They're not coming back. So one of the things that's really difficult about a Mars mission and that we've struggled with in the past is actually landing, so entry of orbit, atmosphere, and landing. And the reason for that is because Mars has such a slight atmosphere that it, you know, technologies such as parachutes that we use on Earth, aren't helpful, and there's really not a lot of resistance, like air resistance, to slow down a vehicle. But at the same time, things like using reverse thrusters like we did on the moon also isn't very applicable because there is that small amount of atmosphere and because there is a large amount of dust and whatnot. And so I'm sure, actually, I don't know if you did or not. Did either of you watch the Curiosity landing a couple years ago?
No.
Okay, so Curiosity.
I read the article about it, though.
Okay, that's something. Well, I'll go through it anyways for the listeners. Curiosity, the rover was about the size total what they landed of a Volkswagen Beetle.
Okay.
And they ended up doing that through a combination of technologies, but one of them was that basically they bubble wrapped it and then just dropped it. and it worked. And if you ever want to feel really good and really happy, just go watch the video of Mission Control when that happened, because the people in Mission Control just go bananas over that. And that's because it was a huge engineering feat to have accomplished that and have had it go off successfully. So working on landing the supplies and the size of a human, you know, a ship necessary to transport humans to Mars is a really big issue that they're still working on. However, coming back from Mars, that's not quite as difficult, because once again, you look at it and you say Mars is about one third the size of Earth. It has one third of Earth's gravity. That means that it is significantly easier to have a ship take off from the surface of Mars than it is from the surface of Earth. You need a lot less power. You need a lot less fuel. And so it's really, it's not too difficult to consider the return trip from Mars.
Right.
As it is to consider getting there in the first place. And I know this has been a long answer, but I do like to add in also that I don't believe that the first trip to Mars will be a one-way trip because there is no quicker way to get rid of the public opinion or squash public support for space travel than by killing astronauts, by killing humans in space. And we don't currently have the technologies necessary to sustain human life on Mars for a reasonable period of time. So for a full lifetime. And so if you don't plan a return trip for a Mars mission, you are in essence sending those people on a suicide mission. Yeah. And that's not something that, first off, NASA would do. And second off, that's not something that the public would support. So I fully believe that it will be a two-way trip.
Nice. So you've gained all this, you know, we found you, people have donated thousands upon thousand dollars to get you to different things. I see your, all this great success. You're speaking and you're a huge supporter of STEM education and all that stuff. I'm a teacher, so I see it all the time in the classroom. But it's got to feel good, like, to be, like I said, 19 years old and all this stuff is happening. Like, what are we working on now? Like, what is the future of this? How are you proceeding? Are you just an average college student, or are you still speaking all over the country? What do you do now?
Yeah, so I actually run a nonprofit.
Okay.
I'm not sure if you're familiar with my nonprofit. It's called the Mars Generation.
Yep.
So the Mars Generation, I'll talk about it briefly for the listeners as well, is a 501c3 that I started about a year and a half ago. And it has three main programs. One of them is the Future of Space Outreach Program, which is basically taking all of the work that I was doing even before I started the nonprofit and transitioning it into a more official format. So a lot of public speaking, a lot of speaking in schools, in classrooms, a lot of curating social media channels and writing blog posts, both for my own blog and for, you know, professional and not professional media sources. All of that kind of stuff, really just to get the word out about space travel and to excite people and to get people involved and educated about the future of space exploration. The second program is the Student Space Ambassador Program, which is a group for young people ranging all the way up to college kids where they can go, and the goal of it is to give them the resources and the tools necessary to go out into their own communities and be ambassadors for STEM education. So whatever that means to them, some of our ambassadors go out and read books to younger classes about science. Some of them are doing digital outreach work as well. You know, it really is up to these students to take it and run with it however they want to. And the third program that we run is our Space Camp Scholarship Program, which is a one-of-a-kind program in the entire world, because not only do we provide the tuition for a student to go to space camp, but we also provide things like travel, a small stipend, those types of things. And this program is open exclusively to students with financial need. And the whole point of why we also provide transportation and whatnot is because for a lot of students who are truly living in poverty, a scholarship to space camp won't mean anything to them unless there's also transportation included, because their families and their communities are not able to bridge that gap between receiving a scholarship and actually attending camp. A $300 or $400 or $500 plane ticket for a student living in Michigan to go to Alabama is a huge obstacle for a lot of young people and a lot of families. So as far as what's next, I'm just going to continue with the Mars Generation, and we'll see how the next year goes with that.
Yeah, I mean, awesome. Like, obviously, you probably are surrounded by people who also want to be, you know, college age kids and do college age kids. Is it hard to stay focused, or are you still able to do funding, or is this like your one and sole mission, like you're completely focused on that?
Oh, gosh, I wouldn't say that, like, this is my one sole thing. Like, I'm definitely still a college kid, and I that's one of the things that I never wanted to give up with this dream, was experiencing life as fully as I could. And part of that is that when you look at having a goal or a dream that's, you know, 20 plus years out, you have to be sure to not overextend yourself as you're chasing after that, because it's really easy to burn out. And it's also really easy to end up at the end and realize that you missed out on a lot of things in life. And so I'm definitely, that's one of the things I value, is balancing. And so I'm involved in a lot of things on campus. I play two sports. I am a social dancer, so I go out and I dance things like waltzing or swing or blues a couple nights a week. I play fiddle, Irish fiddle, in a Irish music group.
Awesome.
And just, you know, other things like that, where I get together with friends on weekends and all the normal college student type stuff. I try to be involved in it. Now, there are a lot of times when I have to make choices between, you know, do I do this or do I do that? And sometimes it ends up being that I put the nonprofit and the work that I'm doing in space education outreach above things that I wanted to do.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not every time, because that balance is really important.
Hey, that's great to hear. And I was, the way you were talking about how much hard you work, I was worried some friend would come up to you, hey, you want to go to party? Ooh, Mars is in 15 years. Sorry. No, can't do that. It was 16 maybe, but no.
Right. No, that wouldn't be any life to live, would it?
Yeah. No, you know, as we've recently seen with like Elon Musk and SpaceX, there's starting to be a lot. We're seeing a lot more privatized stuff with space. Could you see almost a competition with NASA somewhere down the line, or do you just see them as like building it, and NASA's like the prime? Will always be there. Will always go through them.
Yeah, I wouldn't so much say that it's a competition as it is just a natural progression of technology and exploration. So if you look at the past, this is a very common pattern that we've seen in the past, where the government is the trailblazer. The government is the one who goes out and, let's just be real, does all the hard work and is the first to do something. And then private industry fills in after them. And that's what makes it work so well, is that the government then opens things up to private industry to use that space that they've explored. And that's exactly what we're seeing happen right now, is that the government, NASA, has spent a lot of time exploring low Earth orbit and working out how to do that. And now we're seeing private industry start to take an interest in that and really take over that sector, which I think is really important because that then frees up NASA and the government to go out and to take on a new task, to do something bigger and better, to go to Mars, to continue deep space exploration. And so I definitely think that NASA is going to continue to, you know, be around and to be the one that will be doing these big things, but I don't think that they'll be doing it alone. There's definitely a lot more company in space now. It's just where is the company?
Yeah.
So I also think that future missions, such as like a mission to Mars, will be collaborative. So both collaboration between NASA and other countries, as well as NASA and private industry. It's just too expensive and too technically difficult for anyone to do it on their own.
Yeah, I mean, that basically led into my other... I was going to say, do you see it like it's going to be a competition? Or do you see a collaboration coming? And you kind of answered that there.
I could feel it coming.
You felt it.
Even had the chance to...
No, let's talk. As far as extraterrestrials and life on other planets, what are your feelings on that? Is there definitely things on other planets? Do you think it's... possibility of like the aliens we see in any kind of show or movie? What are your feelings towards that?
Oh, I definitely believe in extraterrestrials and that extraterrestrial life is out there. And so that may be hinted a little bit by the fact that I'm a huge science fiction nerd.
I was going to ask you, the next question would be like, what are your favorite space movies? So,
oh God, I will absolutely answer that. Yeah. Well, you know what, ask that one because I have plenty that I can share about that.
All right, go ahead.
This question, I'm a student in astrobiology. That's actually one of the degrees that I'm pursuing right now. And so I do have a little bit of standing to be able to say that from a realistic sense of view, point of view, I do think that extraterrestrial life could very well be out there. I look at it as a point of odds. When you look at, and this is loosely something called the Drake's equation, which is when you look at the number of stars out there that we know about and the number of planets orbiting each star on average, and then the number of those that would be the right composition and the number of those that are in what's known as the habitable or Goldilocks zone. And you basically average all of these values out and you come up with a number, and it shows us that there's a crazy, ridiculous, astronomically large number of planets which are capable of hosting life in our universe.
Right.
And so then it's a question of what is life and how does life develop and those types of things, which is more difficult to get into. But from a basic perspective, I really do think that at the least there is simple unicellular bacterial style life out there, even just within our own solar system.
Yeah. So leading into the other question I asked you, about to ask you about the movies, the other day I was just talking to Mike before, I was listening to Neil deGrasse Tyson on Joe Rogan's podcast, and he was talking about how when he did his fact-checking on Gravity, and he did all these, the movie Gravity with, mm-hmm. who's in that, Sandra Bullock? Yeah, Sandra Bullock. Was that George Clooney too? I don't know.
Yeah,
but
I think so.
he was basically breaking apart all the the scientific things that were wrong in the movie, and he got all this huge backlash. But he was saying like he actually enjoyed the movie, but you know, people think he hates every space movie. So with that, I wanted to ask you what space movies do you enjoy, or are you able to look at them as purely entertainment, or does some of that space nerd come into play?
It absolutely comes into play. And so for me, I group space movies and TV shows into two categories, and of which I can watch. There's a third category that I despise. And the two categories that I can watch are either movies that are trying to be real and are also realistic. And so by that, I mean things like The Martian, which yes. portrays itself as a very real-life situation that could happen within the near future, and did a fantastic job of showing real technology and real situations and, you know, those types of things, and worked very closely with NASA to make things as legitimate as possible. So I loved The Martian, both the book and the movie. Okay. There are points in there where I could pick out inconsistencies, but for the most part, it's a very solid movie. The other category of films and TV shows that I enjoy watching in space are those that, you know, aren't necessarily possible in what they show or do, but aren't trying to act like they're possible either. So in that, I'm talking about things like Babylon 5 or Star Wars, or one of my favorites growing up was Stargate. So Stargate SG-1 or Stargate Atlantis, those types of shows where, you know, they're showing things that are happening in the distant future, or they're possible because this new technology was discovered or something like that. So they're not in any way trying to convince the viewer that this is real or this could happen now. And in that, they don't have to use real technology because they've explained it in a different way. And so I like that. The third category that I'm not such a big fan of are movies like Gravity, which I didn't enjoy watching. And my friends and family would be the first to tell you that I'm terrible to watch this category of movies with, are the ones that try to be real but are not realistic. And so if they're portraying the scenes as something that could actually happen within the near future, but they have technical difficulties in them, things that, you know, within the laws of physics are not possible, or things that as an organization, NASA just on principle would never do, then that really bothers me. And I'll be the first person to, you know, be there and yell at the movie screen and say, that's not right. And I definitely turn into a grumpy old man when I watch those kinds of movies.
Follow-up question. How many years away is NASA from setting up drillers to drill into an asteroid to prevent it from destroying the Earth? Just out of curiosity.
With Aerosmith.
Yes. Definitely need Aerosmith there.
Right. I can't necessarily comment on that because that's not my preferred method of asteroid deflection technology.
Is that a knock on Steven Tyler? Is that what you're saying?
No comment.
Should we send a different brand, like the Beach Boy? Would that do any better?
You could certainly try, but my preferred method of of asteroid deflection is actually painting asteroids. And so that's a concept where if you know early enough that an asteroid is on a collision course with Earth, you can go out and paint it, and that will change the way that basically that it interacts with light and can have an effect on its trajectory then.
Can you paint it really artistically?
I mean, if it's within the right color spectrums, I'm sure that you could program a probe.
There's a ball of the artist. Screw Banksy. Be the first asteroid painter. Abby, you've been a fantastic guest. I could talk to you for hours. Maybe we'll talk in the future. If people want to check you out and see all about you, where's the best place to go, or send you a message, or you know, see all the happenings of what's going on in your life?
Yeah, that's a great question. So anyone who's listening, who's interested in learning more about me or being involved with my journey to Mars, can join me at astronautabby.com or as Astronaut Abby on most social media platforms, such as Facebook, Twitter, YouTube. And they can also join me if they're interested in my nonprofit at themarsgeneration.org or at the Mars Generation on most social media platforms as well. So thank you so much for having me on the show today. It's been a pleasure. There's nothing that I like more than getting to chat about space exploration with fun people. So thank you.
Anytime. It was a fantastic, like I said, I would love to get you back on when you got something else going on. I have one last question. I have always thought those commercials and advertisements where people, like men, are advertised to buy stars for their girlfriends and fiancés and stuff like that, I always said it's complete BS. True or false?
What, that is, like, that my opinion is that's
BS? No, but you, like, is that just a scam? Are they actually giving you stars to name, like actual star? Or are they just saying, thank you for the $130, you just, here's a certificate, here's your star?
No, you can actually name a star.
What?
And yeah, that's real.
And it actually gets into, like, the registry and stuff like that?
Yeah, that's legit.
No.
Yeah, when you look at the number of stars that are visible in our night sky, even, or that we are aware of through various kinds of, astronomy, there are more than I can even begin to describe in numbers. I've heard before that within our own galaxy, there are 10 times the number of sand grains on Earth. That's the number of stars.
Who's in charge of selling those? How do they get the rights to name all the stars? Why can't I start my own business and name those stars whatever I want to name them?
I don't know. I've never bought one. I'm sure that
it's BS. It's BS. It's it's
when
up
you
there.
Become an astronaut, they force you to buy one. It's very weird, yeah.
Like I was
the Armstrong had to borrow money to go up to the moon to get the star.
Like I would buy a Verbal Shenanigans star right now if I thought it was legit, but I don't, and I don't believe it.
Well, I'll look into that then.
See, if it was through NASA, if NASA was selling the stars, I'd believe it. But I feel like I could start my own business and be like, yep, that star
NASA
is...
NASA probably wouldn't have budget problems anymore if they were allowed to sell stars.
Yeah, you know how many foolish guys there are at Valentine's Day? NASA would clean up.
Exactly.
Abby, you've been absolutely...
I think we should buy Orion Belt if we name it the Verbal Shenanigans Podcast Star.
Yeah, we should be the belt buckle.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or even better... Abby, when you get up to Mars, can you bring one of our like flyers or something and put it up there? That'd be really cool.
Wow. Once again, I can't make any promises right now. I'll try and keep you guys in mind.
I actually did have a question that I forgot to ask you, which is a kind of serious question. I want to ask, what if, and God forbid, what if it didn't happen, like you didn't become an astronaut? Do you have like a backup plan in place, or would that be okay with you, or would that just devastate you?
Oh, thank you so much for asking that. That's one of my favorite questions to be asked, and that I always try to emphasize when I speak to students or in classrooms, because I think it's really important for young people who are considering becoming astronauts to hear this, which is that I absolutely have a backup plan.
Awesome.
And my backup plan is worked into my plan A, actually. So you could say that plan A is becoming an astronaut, but plan B is being an astrobiologist.
There you go.
Now,
plan 1A.
I need plan B in order for plan A to work out. And so if plan A doesn't work out, I still have plan B. To fall back on. And that's what a lot of people don't realize about astronauts, though, is that the time that they spend actually either training for a mission or being on a mission and being in outer space is very small,
right,
compared to the amount of time that they spend in the rest of their careers. You have to do something before you're an astronaut, and you have to do something after you're an astronaut. And so every astronaut that you talk to will have a career that they were involved with before and after being an astronaut as well. So it's
awesome.
It's one of those nice situations where you get to have a plan B worked in there.
Amazing. Abby, you have been an absolute pleasure. You are smart, you're well-spoken, and we wish you 100% best of luck, and we hope to see you on the news one day waving to us from Mars.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it. And it was a pleasure chatting with both of you.
Just you there, Berlu?
Yep, it's me.
Oh, damn it.
Hung up on the wrong person.
What a great interview.
Yeah.
God, when I was 19, I was like thinking about how like we could stack up all the Busch Light boxes in my college dorm without getting caught. Like that was our project.
Yeah, I mean, I was,
how are we going to hide these from the RA?
Yeah, I was just—it was just amazing all the stuff that she's doing and how set up she is with her life and her plan B. This is my plan B, the show, so it's not going too well for me.
Time to go to C or D, buddy. If plan B is this show, you are in trouble.
Yeah. I should really think about stuff, you know. The plan A thing hasn't been going too well.
Well, considering the recorder breaking and the $150 in Canada calls in the last 2 months, the show is back in the red.
You get your bill later. Damn it, she was in space when we talked to Abby.
Let's call. Let's try to do this. Let's see. So if I call this guy Mike, nope, that's putting you on hold. Oops, hold on. Oops, shit. Hello?
You're on your iPhone?
Yeah. Add call, right?
Yeah. Oh. Yeah, add call, call him. Once he picks up, hit merge calls, and then we'll all be together.
Okay. So I got to copy this. I'll write this number down real quick. I didn't save it. Hold on. Hello? Hold on. Hello?
Hello?
Hey, is it Mike?
Hey, Scott.
Hey,
hey, what's going on, man?
What's up, brother? You're in Hawaii, correct?
Yes, sir, for about a little more than 8 years now.
8 years, Jesus. Now, hold on, let me see if this is the first time we've ever done a three-way call, because my co-host is in North Carolina. Mike, are you there?
I'm on it.
There you go. All right,
yeah,
cool.
I'm still here.
Can you hear him, Mike?
Yeah, I can hear him.
All right, cool. So, in Hawaii. So we got someone in North Carolina, Hawaii, and Jersey right now. It's pretty cool. But so, Mike, I was explaining, so you're both Mike, so I'll just call you Mike, and Berlew, you're Berlew. But I was explaining how I got this message out of the blue. I said, you know, it was a guy who was a year older than me, played soccer with him, blah, 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 blah. And how you called me, and you didn't call me. You messaged me and said that you apologize for stealing my Nintendo games. Well, not stealing. I guess borrowing my Nintendo games and never returning them. Now,
yeah,
I had no such recollection of the games. Now, so how old how old were we?
I was either my senior year, right before I went to college, or I was back that summer after my freshman year of college. But I was just back for a couple weeks. So, you know, 17, 18 years old.
Okay, so we're 17, 18 years old. Now, are we partying at the time? Or are we on our way? Like, how did this video game scenario go down?
Well, I'll tell you, I'll kind of track back to it first. And I'll tell you that for the last, you know, since my entire adult life, like, as you look back at your life, like, I shouldn't have done that one. Like, for you know, when you get mature enough to do that, I've always had this in the back of my mind. Like, man, I never returned that guy's video games. And it was like a half dozen of them. So it was like, for the last 10, 15 years, anytime I've seen your name on Facebook, you know, we have similar friends. So, like, you know, sometimes we'll see each other's comments here and there. Or anytime Facebook suggested I send you a friend request, it was an instant moment of shame. Like, oh.
Wow.
Like, yeah, because, you know, these things have value now. So, like, back in the day, it was just, like, nobody gave a shit. It was, you know, Sega, you know, Super Nintendo 64 was out. So, at the time, Nintendo, you know, there's no nostalgia to it yet. There's no value to it at all.
Right.
So, for 10 years now, every time I've seen your name, it's been just, like, 10 minutes of just, like, I'm a dick. Like, just... So the story and the messaging you out of nowhere was just, like, I saw your name somewhere, and it was finally, like, you know what? It's time. I've got to stop being chased by this demon.
No, you're not in it. We were theorizing that maybe you're in like a 12-step program, and
not at all, man. It just conscience of like, and like, you know what it is? I think when the NES Classic just came out, I think that was just like the straw that broke my back, and I was just like, you know, I got to tell this guy I'm sorry.
Well, now dude. Before I absolve you of your sins, what I might not, because what games do you remember any of the particular games?
No, I remember that they were obscure and special. I remember when I saw them at your house, I was like, oh, shit, I've always wanted to play this game. I can't believe I found someone who had it. This is like the game from my childhood that my parents wouldn't buy me or whatever.
Because if it's River City Ransom, I'm not forgiving you.
It's possible. I'm not going to deny or confirm that. But the story behind it is that evening, I'd been at your house. You know, I knew you through, you know, pretty much all high school.
Right.
And, you know, I'd been at your house, I think that was maybe the first or second time.
Right.
Another time would have involved soccer. It would have been, like, like, a pickup or a drop-off, like, someone's whatever. But I think this was the first time I was ever inside of your home. And I was only in there for, like, 15 minutes. We just stopped at your house for something or to pick you up or something. And I was like, oh, shit, I saw him. You're like, yeah, man, just take him, whatever. Went back to my house that night, put him down somewhere, you know, played, like, one or two of them. And then, you know, went away to college and then came back for like, you know, the winter break or something and was like, hey, mom, where's the Nintendo? And she's like, all right, I tossed that shit out. I looked at her like, I was so mad at her. I was like, mom, there was like a half dozen games that weren't even mine. She's like, well, you're just leaving your shit here. You're in college, whatever. Nintendo, whatever.
Yeah.
But the night, I don't remember what it was. I know Brian Flansbaum was involved.
A mutual friend of ours.
I don't know if it was a night where he and I had gone to a hockey game and then stopped at your house after. I just remember it was a completely random, like, it was almost like I was sent to your house to steal these games from you. Like,
wow.
Just fate intervened and just decided you didn't need these Nintendo games. And apparently you didn't even need to remember them either. That's how crazy it is.
No recollection. In fact, I thought that when you messaged me, I thought you sent the message to, like, the wrong person. And I'm like, you know, this guy's either high or he's just like messaging someone completely different. But
I got to be honest, I really hope this was a master plan to steal your games. Like, even this is adding to the plot. It's like a little Ocean's 11 here. It's like, oh, he's going to catch me. Oh, dude, I'm so sorry. My mom threw him out. And then he goes to Hawaii and keeps him forever.
Yeah, exactly. What if this is like another smokescreen, like 10 years later, like he's he's throwing up a fake apology.
He's going to torment your life with this. No, man, that's
And then 5 years from now, I'm going to get a video. They're like, bitch, I still got your games. And like him.
Yeah. Toss the River City Ransom into the volcano. Yeah.
Like one of them was like Nintendo World Championships, which is like worth $2,000. And yeah, bitch, that's how I got to Hawaii. Yeah.
Yeah, no, like it's just complete, you know, complete seriousness, man. Like I remember very, very vaguely the details, but very specifically the outcome. And the outcome was I borrowed a handful, like, you know, 4 to 6 obscure games. I'm talking like Battletoads 2, like just random.
Oh, man.
You know what I'm saying? Like River City Ransom, like just very just like just nobody had those. And I was like, oh, and you're like, yeah, whatever, take them. And then I never gave them back.
Hey, Brennan, you see my jet ski? Your games paid for this.
I'm just walking on the beach. Oh, wait, I'm playing on your power pad, woman.
Well, Mike, I would like to... I am extending the olive branch. You are absolved from all guilt. It's okay. You should have confronted this demon. We've been out of high school for a long time now.
Well, you know, you just get shame over. So, you know, it's something that you should have said something about, like, right? But, you know, the longer you don't say anything, the harder it gets to say something.
You know, you're the real winner here. You came clean. Your conscience is light. You know, and now we could be Facebook friends without you ever feeling like I'm going to find you.
Yep. Well, good to catch up with you, Scott. I'm glad to hear you're doing well. Yeah. Definitely got a new fan, and good catching back up with you.
Awesome, man. And Hawaii, what do you do out in Hawaii?
I you know, worked after school in New York City and just got tired of the city.
Right.
Had some family out here, and just decided that's tired of being at the computer all day.
Nice.
Just before I turned 25, moved out here. Like I said, I stayed with family for a few months, and now I work at a luau.
Really? To
a hula dancer. Yeah. Mm. Three kids. It's serious.
You love it out there?
Yeah, it's nice. I mean, it's kind of still not used to the change in seasons, but then you check the weather back east, and it's very easy to appreciate that there's no change in seasons.
Yeah, yeah. Man. Well, what about your Yankees? Are you able to watch them?
When I first got out here, they were actually on a lot of Wednesday night baseball, Sunday night baseball, so we were able to pick them up a good amount on there, and then obviously they fell off the last few years.
Yep.
Been a little harder. But, you start picking up just tricks on the internet, figure it out. find streams here and there. You got to get your games, and you got to get your games. But for the most part, the big games, I can still catch them.
Nice. Nice. Well,
and other than that, just a time difference. Other than that, you're up at you want to watch a college football game and on a Saturday, you're up at 6 a.m.
Yeah. Yeah. See, I like that with I watch a lot of Premier League soccer, and I love it on Sunday mornings when the games are on at 9. It's perfect. It doesn't waste a whole day. Like NFL football is exhausting. You watch the 1 o'clock and 4 o'clock game, and all of a sudden the whole day's gone.
Very true. Very true. Yeah. Yeah. Over here, just when the sun goes down, pretty much the late game's done, and honestly, 7 o'clock's not that bad.
That's nice.
But then if I want to catch, you're watching Premier Leagues at 9 o'clock in the morning, for me, it's three. I got to really want to see that game than watch a game at 3 a.m.
Yeah. 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 But that's all right.
So, yeah, if that's the trade off, I'm all right. That's my complaint. Yeah. What was me?
Berlo, you had a question?
No, I was about to say, is there an actual sports scene out there, or is it pretty much if you bring up sports or foreigner?
No, there's a sport. I mean, a lot of NFL wise, a lot of California teams, obviously, those are the ones that you're just proximity wise. So, a lot of Raiders, a lot of Chargers fans.
Right.
That's just, people still keep up with it. I mean, it's not as, nothing's getting shut down for football. Obviously, that's why the Pro Bowl can't even come back anymore. But people still enjoy it. People are still fans out here. It's different, You go to the beach and, watch the game and go to the beach right after. Listen, whatever it is. So it doesn't slow down, I guess, as much for the sport, I can say.
Well, Mike, thanks for a few minutes. I hope you feel the weight off your back, and I hope life just clears up for you now. You're able to spend, able to look at your kids and smile finally. You're able to make.
I thought he was going to off himself with his laser gun.
Yeah. You're able to make love without me thinking of me peering at you. Big things are on the horizon for you. And if you ever come back to Jersey, maybe we should play each other in Tecmo Bowl, because I've been looking for it for 12 years. So thanks, buddy, and enjoy Hawaii, man.
Good talking to you. Thanks, Scott. Thanks, fellas. Have a good afternoon.
Later.
Catch you later, man.
What the hell are the odds of that?
Yeah. He had to get off the line and talk to a kid he knew in junior high. They took his Atari 2600.
Yeah, it'd be funny if he has a game room in his house that's just loaded with it. Every system you can imagine.
But he has every system and a picture of the person he took it from. That'd be awesome.
Just all this guilt building up and building up and building up.
Listen, I'm really sorry I took you on television, man. I'm really sorry. I didn't even know what it was at the beginning.
All right. Hey.
Hey. What the hell happened? I heard yell out very loud and said, love you, baby.
I don't think I said love you, baby, but I did say ow. I ran into the ottoman.
Ah, gotcha. There's something about love. That girl in your roof house, so, yeah.
Oh, well, maybe. But you got anything else, Berlo? I know you had the dog is sick.
No, not really. No.
A little allergic reaction.
What's up?
Your dog.
Oh, yeah, the dog. Yeah. Yeah, that was the... She's doing better right now. We were sitting. She was acting weird. She actually pooped in the house on the
Sunday, and she was panting and acting weird. But then I think it was like halfway, it was like 9:30, I was watching The Walking Dead and
being
the girl alone. Yeah, yeah. Well, luckily we could walk away from that, but we were watching, and I looked over, and I'm like, hey, is the dog's face looking a little weird to you? And she's like, yeah, and I felt the side of her lip, and her lip grew like three times the size, and I realized her eye was kind of bulging, you know, so we had to go to the emergency vet last night, or Sunday night, just to calm her down there. They think she had an allergic reaction and had to give her shots and a steroid and a Benadryl. Then on top of it, after I fly out here to North Carolina, the girl says, well, she's not really eating. What should I do? And I pretty much had to tell her, you know, you might as well go back to the emergency vet, because if I was there, it would be like, all right, let's watch the dog. But unfortunately, when you know 12 inches of snow is coming and you're not going anywhere, right, you can't really chance saying, oh, yeah.
Obie's had a few things over the years, like where that one time I went to get him up in the morning and his eyes were swollen shut and he had a freaking ulcer in his eye. And
oh, wow.
Yeah, he had an ulcer, like... and I guess they said there's some kind of plant material, and that was right around Christmas. So I think one of the needles from the tree possibly got in there, and that was fun because they're like, "Oh yeah, we made this these eye drops. They all you got to do is put them in your dog's eyes like three times a day." I'm like, "Dude,
well, he'll understand that if you explain it to him like that."
yeah. Try. You know what? You want to know how many drops I probably got in the 10-day cycle? Probably like four.
You probably spent like $70 on special dog eye drops and wasted half the bottle on the first day.
Yeah, it was pretty crazy because like they like apparently like made him out of his own blood or something. Like, I don't know. It was like something with like his red blood cells. Yeah, they spun his blood. Meanwhile, that's illegal in like UFC, you know. But
yeah, that doesn't sound right. I'm kind of that sounds like you would hear the Harry Potter movie.
Screw that, man. I am 100% on the HGH train. If I'm getting old, I want a nice little dose of HGH, you know, with breakfast. Apparently, in small doses, that's like the fountain of youth. HGH, it's like helps you heal in injuries. It's made out of your own testosterone. Like, screw that. Let's do it.
Oh yeah.
I'm not being tested by a sports agency, you know, like, screw it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm 40. I'm not going to get picked up by anybody. I mean, maybe Sixers, the way they're going, but still, I'm all for it.
Well, maybe we should start, like, a campaign. Let Burlow play.
We'll sell out the stadium. But it's like the second quarter down by, like, 40 to the Warriors. Burlow.
Let him play. Let him play. I bet you if we made a big enough social media presence, we can make it happen. Maybe
that'd
not
be
you.
Amazing.
Maybe not you play, but maybe we can get you on the bench for a game or something like that.
Yeah.
Because there's no way they'd ever let you play.
God, I've been watching Andre Iguodala. I think I found a weakness. I think I can. When he goes right, I'm going to go left.
But maybe we can get you in like a – maybe we can get you into like a community college game even, like the last 2 minutes of a game.
Yeah.
That'd be hilarious. Let Burlow play campaign.
We'll just go to every sport and see if they'll let me play. That'd be great.
But
I don't know how to ice skate, but, you know, give me a couple minutes out there on the rink.
But, yeah, I'm glad the dog's okay. It always sucks. Everything with the dogs is always super expensive and super like, oh, my God, because they can't talk to you. But, like, half the time they're, like, fine.
Yeah.
They're fine in, like, 3 days. But
Yep, they're back to licking their own butt. And you're like, God damn it, why couldn't you be like this yesterday?
You know,
why can't you do it during business hours?
I know, $400 later. Why couldn't you just, you know, be a little bit better?
Yeah.
But, yeah, I guess let's get the hell out of here. We could talk about other things, but we've been going for a while now. So,
yeah.
Burlew, anything to promote?
I'm going to promote something from one of our former guests, Brad Jones, a.k.a. Cinema Snob. His site is thecinemasnob.com, and send out there his new movie, Jesus Bro, will be out, released on April 14th on Vimeo and DVD. For more information, go to his site, thecinemasnob.com.
What is it called, Jesus Bro?
Jesus, comma, bro, exclamation point.
All right. Yeah. So definitely. And
yeah.
I'm glad you didn't promote Tonight in the Walking Dead, because that show sucks.
It's kind of funny. Izzy told me, yeah, blah, blah, and blah, blah died. I'm like, I don't know who they are, and I really don't care that you spoiled it for me right now.
Mm-hmm.
It's getting that bad, and I'm going to have to eventually watch it to do the next one, yeah. But lately it's been a little painful doing them. It used to be like tongue-in-cheek, oh, we all love it, and this is just a little fun. Now it's kind of like, seriously, this sucks.
You know the show is struggling when nobody posts anything on Facebook anymore about it. When's the last time you saw anybody be like, oh, my God, like, Glenn, or, you know, whatever, like, nobody.
Yeah.
Nothing.
It used to be, like, you won't even say the answer. It'd just be a Facebook post. No! Yeah. And it's like, everybody's like, what? Walking Dead. It just ends this rare. Now it's just like...
Yeah. Suddenly zombies are just not dangerous anymore, which...
Yeah.
To me, takes that
like
world 8, out of it.
8,000 characters on there. They're all doing fine. They got you got a group threat like the Saviors, and it's just like, give me a cantaloupe. Yeah. I'm mad.
Terrible. Terrible. But I guess in the spirit of things, I will promote... I might as well promote the 23rd. Tap House 15, where you can listen to our last podcast. Well, where we were from our last podcast with the Miller Brothers, UFC.
Mm-hmm.
Just a
great interview.
Oh, it was great. Free comedy show. I don't know if there's any seats left, but there's always like people canceling stuff. So if you want to go, it's free. And Sean Lynch from The Walking Dead, he still hasn't made his appearance, but he told me it's between between episode 14 and 16 are his next chances. He's like, he said he will not be in 15, but next week is 14 and the finale 16. So hopefully we will see him soon. But he's headlining Gordon Baker Bone, Mike D'Alto, Mike Cicoli. It's a free show.
Great lineup.
Yeah. I also want to if you check out our Instagram, I'm trying to do more on Instagram with the show, because Facebook's pretty much proven useless unless we pay a lot of money, and obviously we don't have that because we are a grassroots thing here.
Put it on the list of stuff to do, get money.
Yeah. But if you go to the Instagram, I've been doing a little like 30 guests in 30 days, which is like all guests that have been on the show. And we're just trying to get a little action there. And then Twitter is VS Comedy. And I guess that's it. If you could leave us a review on iTunes, that really helps. And if you could even... The thing that helps the most is, like, share with your friends. Like, hey, this was funny, or this is a really good interview. Just share it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's definitely the best thing you can do.
Even if you don't like it, just share it.
Yeah.
We don't care.
Yeah, just share it. Even if you say this is awful,
this is the worst podcast I ever heard. You have to listen to this.
Yeah, I mean Donald Trump survived the whole grabbing thing. So, I mean,
why not?
Yeah, but let's get out of here. Life is funny, people. Laugh at it. Keep the wind at your back, Burlo. I'll see you in person soon.
Yep. This was kind of fun. I did the whole podcast from the office, so I wonder what people heard from me.
Oh. Did you have your pants on?
No. I got to keep it real, you know?
Yeah, I
let it fly when I'm in front of you. I let it fly when I'm on the phone.
Well, I want to thank Abby, and I want to thank Mike Wanacue for enlightening us on the video game saga. It's okay, buddy. It's okay.
Mm-hmm.
See you later, Mike.
Goddamn, like Contra anyway.
Later, brother.
Later.
Tom, you've really made the grade. And the papers want to know whose shirt you wear. Now it's time to leave the capsule if you dare.